Hey folks, and welcome to another episode of Podcraft. Podcraft is the show about everything podcasting, from launching a show to monetization, everything in between. I'm Colin Gray, as usual, and this time around it's an interview show where we're talking to another experienced and excellent podcaster, someone I met at the Youpreneur Summit back in November, actually, and absolutely loved her talk on creating books, actually. It was books to grow your business, how to be published, how to use that to grow everything else you do. But coincidentally, she also runs a podcast to do that, which is really successful. Lots of different ways that she's monetizing that. And you'll be glad to know who it is. It's Joanna Penn from The Creative Pen. How are you doing, Joanna?
Oh, thanks for having me, Colin. It's great to be on the show.
Oh, no worries. Thank you for coming along. Yeah, like I said there, I really loved your talk at Youpreneur. It was great. It was so practical. So many things in it that you could take away and do. So I took loads from it. I've got some plans around books and series and stuff this year. So thank you for that in the first place.
Oh, no, thank you. And I mean, I'm so enthusiastic about books, but it was funny. I was talking to someone the other day about podcasting, and so often our body of work is sort of the things we publish, or, you know, the talks we do. But actually, I think podcasting will give us part of our body of work, the people we touch. And so I consider podcasting just as important in my career as writing.
Yeah, great. Excellent. Well, that's a good testimonial for us, I suppose. So The Creative Pen is a site about, would you say, is it about publishing? How do you describe it? Is it publishing in general? What do you say?
Well, firstly, writing. So I write, I've written 27 books at this point. Mm-hmm. I write fiction and also nonfiction. So I have three author names. So essentially, I start with, you know, talking about writing fiction, writing nonfiction, publishing options, and particularly self-publishing, as well as book marketing and making a living with your writing. So again, it's kind of taking much of what we do and taking it into the realm of the monetization aspect. So creation and monetization, both important, you know, for people like us doing this as a career.
Yes, excellent. And the podcast, is that the exact same audience, the exact same topic, or is it a niche of it?
Yes, definitely. I actually started the podcast in 2009. So I'm one of the old school podcasters. And I actually started the podcast to get to know other authors. Like back then, I didn't even know author friends. And so, you know, really good tip if you want to start podcasting is to do something that you're so passionate about, you don't need to make any money from it. Yes. Because those will be the long years probably at the beginning. Yeah. But yes, I cover pretty much the same stuff. And it stems from a personal interest. You know, I'm an author, so I can talk about my journey and talk to other people who are on their journey as well.
Yeah, perfect. So, I mean, you've been going that long. That's amazing that you've kept it up for that. That's 8 years now. That's a very long running podcast, which is a feat in itself. But beyond that, you've monetized it. You've actually made a success of this podcast and are getting a real return on it, haven't you? That's mainly what I wanted to concentrate on today, all the different ways you're doing that. So I wanted to delve in first. We've obviously talked a bit about this in the past, and I've got an idea of what I want to go through. First of which was something that people often start with, which is Patreon. So what can you tell me what you're doing with Patreon and how you've kind of the story of starting up there and how you've developed it over the years?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, obviously for me, I didn't start with Patreon because it didn't exist.
Yeah,
so it's actually, you know, something that's very now.
Yeah,
so basically all of my monetization does roll in together because in 2015, I'd been doing the podcast 6 years and I felt I was doing it every 2 weeks or kind of sporadically. So it was never on the same day of the week. It was, you know, based on when I had time and I incorporated it into the blog. So I was talking about my books. So in some way it was indirectly monetized. It was building my brand. So it was a marketing angle, but I felt it was taking so much time that I had two choices. One, I would give it up completely, or I would have to monetize it. And I started off in the corporate sponsorship, but I can circle back around to that. But the Patreon, or Patreon, as people say, was basically somebody, I interviewed someone on my podcast. This is often the way, isn't it? And they said, why don't you just ask your audience? And I felt that massive reaction to, I don't want to ask for money from my audience. This is a free show. It's been free for years. How can I do that? But in the end, I went, okay, why not just give it a go? And I put quite a low target on the bonus. You know, you have these bonus levels. And I just started putting it out there. But what I also did is, and this was because I only did two a month at a time, my Patreon is based on two a month, even though now I then move to a weekly show and do it at the same time every Monday morning. But basically, it was a really big deal to get into Patreon, and it was like $1 the first month and $5 and then $20. And now I'm up to around $850 per show, two shows a month. So it's like $1,600 US. But with the other forms of monetization, it it's pretty good. And also the people who are patrons are really invested in the show. So it's a double whammy. It's some money, or even though they can get it free, but also these are the super fans.
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. That's not small money. That's an actual living for a lot of people. So that's great that you've got it up to that level. A testament to your fan base, I think, and what you're offering, obviously. So you mentioned that there's a few things in there I think I want to ask about that people are often concerned. First of all, is that frequency. Have you gone for a standard monthly pledge, or is it you press the button, I've released an episode, and that draws in the money at that point?
Well, I basically charge for two a month. So if there are five Mondays in a month, which sometimes there are, I only charge for two of those. And then the other shows are free. And I put, you know, free shows, even though, of course, they can all be free. But then I also, in terms of my my Patreon kind of bonus, I do an audio only Q&A. So my Patreon listeners get access to a form where they can enter questions. And then I do extra audio. And what's nice now, again, a new feature that they introduced is you can get your own RSS feed. And so if you do extra recordings that never even go live on your site, you can distribute them through Patreon. So that's basically how I do it. I just charge for the first two shows of every month, and then I just put them up free.
So you are doing the paper show thing. You know what I mean, in terms of you can just do a standard. Perfect. Okay, that makes sense. So the bonuses, is that your main bonus, in that you get bonus content, you get free content that is not available outside of the Patreon subscribers? Is that the main one that people sign up for?
Yeah, that's the main one. And then the top tier, the $5 per show, is basically they get all my nonfiction audiobooks and ebooks as well. Although some cheeky people obviously email immediately. Sometimes I just say, hey, would you mind supporting for a month or so before you get your bonuses? But most people obviously are absolutely amazing. And I didn't really have much of a drop off when Patreon had their fee glitch month or so ago as we speak. But yeah, I think if you're doing an audio show, it makes sense to do extra audio. And that would be probably a tip, is make sure your bonuses resonate with your audience.
Yeah, that's really interesting that they're offering an RSS feed now. I didn't know they did that. So you can actually directly through Patreon offer those extra episodes.
Yes, it's just a little link on the right-hand side of your page. And I have a little response whenever anyone pledges, and I just copy and paste that in so they know how to find that. And I also have the backlist on a special page on my website that people can get. So if they start supporting me now, even for just $1, they get 2.5 years worth of extra audio if they want. And you know how some people want to go and listen to the whole backlist.
Go back and binge it all.
Have
you ever used... total tier bonuses, like if we make it to 1,000 an episode or 2,000 an episode, we'll do this or that?
No, I mean, as I said, I got in quite early on Patreon, and they didn't have a lot of the different options. And I feel at this stage I can't really change what I've done. So no, I haven't done that. I do think, like, a really important point is don't make these numbers too low. You know, say if we reach $250, then I will give everyone a free hours consulting or something, you know, because you would be surprised at how fast these things can add up now.
So have you any, you know, getting to that level is brilliant in terms of the monthly income you have there. What's worked best for you in terms of getting people to sign up, other than the standard, you know, ask people, which is actually where a lot of people fall down? Any other tricks or tactics for getting people to sign up?
No, that literally is it. I mean, what's interesting though, and I did find this quite difficult at first, is so when I have a show, you know, I do the introduction, then I do usually an interview. And before the interview, I'll say today's show is sponsored by, so I might say Kobo Writing Life, one of my big sponsors for the show, corporate sponsors. So I say the show is sponsored by Kobo. Then I'll say thank you to all my new patrons. And then if you would like to support the show, here's my Patreon link. And so what's interesting is and then within my introduction, I might also be introducing a webinar, which is an affiliate link. I might be talking about one of my audiobooks. I might be talking about one of my books. So I think, you know, there I'm actually putting multiple income streams within one show. So the Patreon segment has become a segment of the show, where new patrons will have their names read out and the call to action is, if you'd like to support the show, here's my link. But then it also, I'm still pairing that with a corporate sponsor. It's a bit like YouTube in that way, in that people are more used to corporate sponsors now, so they don't necessarily bat an eyelid. So realistically, with Patreon, all I've ever done is stick a segment into the podcast before the interview, which is, you know, this is how you can support me. I haven't done anything else.
No, that's perfect though. There's a couple of things in there, I think, which are a little bit different than most people do, which is a lot of people just sort of throw in their Patreon link at the very end of the show, say. They don't treat it as, say, an advert, like you're talking about a sponsorship advert or something, putting it in the middle of the show, which is always the most actioned sponsored slot. That's why we pay more for a mid-roll than anything else. So including it in there, and alongside the other sponsor slot, making it as important, you know, giving it the same precedence as something that's paid for, because it is paid for, but a lot of people think of it as charity or donations or something. So they kind of downgrade it almost. So that's great that you're doing that. And the other thing, you mentioned there, you're reading out the Patreon, the new Patreon contributors. Now that's always a great action, isn't it? Call to action, because people go, oh, I'd love to get mentioned on here. One of my favourite shows. I'll just have to donate a couple of dollars and I've got my name on here.
Yeah. And also it's interesting. You do get some people who sponsor as a business. So they get their business read out, or they'll say, can you read out this name instead of another name? And I'm happy to do that, obviously. Yeah, and some of those people will unsubscribe, but that's fine. And the other thing is that social proof. It's very, very interesting. When I do personal shows, like no interview, when I just go into like my own journey or something I'm struggling with at the moment, I will get a lot more Patreon subscribers after a personal show than I do after an interview show. So it's quite interesting that way. You know, if people get value from a show, they are more likely to then sponsor.
Perfect. Yeah. I mean, it stands to reason, doesn't it? It's a great show. I got a lot from this. I want to pay the person back. But then if you get a benefit indeed of getting yourself mentioned, even better. Let's go on to the corporate sponsor stuff then, because that you said that's where you started in terms of monetization. How did you mentioned the fact that, you know, you're not getting as much return as you wanted off it, so you had to make it pay in another way. What was your first step towards getting that first sponsor?
Well, because it was, well, first of all, it was numbers. So I looked at the standard kind of corporate rates. I think I looked at John Lee Dumas has a download on rates. I'm sure you do as well, in terms of what you can expect. Then I looked at my numbers. So I use Blueberry and Amazon S3. So I got some numbers, and then I was like, oh, this is quite good. I could actually get, you know, a couple of hundred per show, or, you know, over time it's grown. But at that point it was like, oh, this is, I could get something, and that would pay for the transcription, for example, because I do transcription on the show for SEO purposes. So I then had some relationships with companies who I was already promoting in different ways. So either affiliate relationships or just companies that I really liked and I know would need promoting. So I just talked to some of my contacts. So I actually went looking for those sponsorships. Now a lot of people come to me, but I still only work with companies that I personally use and recommend, because I think that's so important. And it has to fit your audience, or it's not going to make any difference. Like, they'll just go away. And also for me, I did have 99designs for a while. Like, they're on every every blooming show. And I think it made the difference to have something a bit different, something that might be tailored to your show as opposed to the same thing that you hear on every show. So I guess it depends whether you approach them or they approach you. But certainly you have to know your numbers. And then I did like a 2-page pitch sheet with this is the demographic. So I looked at the countries that people were in, the number of downloads per show. And then I was like, it will cost you this much per show or this much with a discount. And they actually bought the whole, my first sponsor bought the whole year up front. And I mean, little tip, it's awesome to get a big chunk of cash up front. And now my annual rate is pretty high. But then what you realize if your show's growing all the time is that you sold those later shows at a discount because you know you're going up. So probably better to sell 3 to 6 months at a time so that you can adjust your rates necessarily.
Indeed. But I mean, that would have saved you a lot of time and effort in going out and finding people. So often it's worth a little bit of a discount, isn't it, to get that kind of longer term relationship.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I only have, at the moment, I have one major corporate sponsor, Kobo Writing Life, and then I have a couple of other ones. But at the moment, I only have three, and I like three. And I sell about 35 shows of the total in the year. So I'm a weekly show. So I keep some for myself. And I promote my own products. And I also promote affiliate, you know, webinars and events and other things in those other slots. So I think that's important too, is to just make sure you keep space for what you're doing as well.
That's really interesting. So you have a set number of slots basically per episode, and you treat each one, you know, you can put something of your own in there. You're not just like doing three sponsor slots and then throwing in something for yourself. You make sure you're not overdoing it by, if you sell one of your own products, you cut a sponsor slot instead. Is that right?
Yeah, I only ever do one kind of corporate sponsor per show. And then, as you say, I have the Patreon slot, and then I'll often have a webinar or something as well.
Yeah, perfect. So you mentioned that with 99 Designs, you did something a bit different. That's always something I like delving into. Like, how do you do the sponsored slots? Can you describe one of them, just what you did to make it a bit more unique?
Oh, well, I mean, I didn't do 99 Designs in a unique way. Oh, I mean, I've done other ones. So, you know, just I think tailoring it. So if you use a service, you can really talk about what you're doing. So Ingram Spark, who are a publishing company, I use them for my print publishing. So I really just will go into a much more personal story of using the service and some of the great things they were doing, and just make it a lot more personal than, you know, so many corporate ads you hear are repetitive. You know, the same thing, exactly the same thing read by a different producer. And I do think, you know, you'll get much more traction if you do something more personal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think those personal stories are what make a good sponsored slot, and that it's interesting to your listeners. They want to hear what you've been doing, you know, your experience with something. And even though it's a sponsor slot, you're telling them about a product, you're teaching them something too, because it's a case study about what you've done and how successful it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, actually, that's a really good point, because with Kobo Writing Life, for example, I get them to record tips. So instead of it just being an ad, it's like, here's a tip for selling more books on Kobo. And, you know, that is much more effective than anything else. I also think that, you know, if people listening do buy ads, I do think the voice of the advertiser, if, you know, if I use an MP3 segment for the ad, if you have the same person reading that ad, you know, at your company, or you use your voice in that ad slot, people get used to a voice. So if you buy, say, 10 slots on a podcast and you're the voice in that slot every time, that can really be effective. I mean, I have some of the people who've done ad slots get recognized at events because they've been on my show. It's really funny.
That's great. So they build a bit of a personal brand almost around somebody within their company. That's great. Cool. Okay, so the top tips there really are that in the early days when you're trying to go out and look for people, it's those existing relationships, isn't it? It's those products that you see on your desk, you know, beside you, the things that you're using right there and then. Get in touch with those type of people first and build those relationships. And hopefully if you can do the personal stories, the case studies, then that sponsorship will work and they'll come back for more. And hopefully you won't have to search out anymore after that.
Yeah, exactly. And especially those of us, you know, I think you and I are quite similar in our sort of more introvert tendencies. And, you know, we're not going to be like, sell, sell. Yes. You know, I do not want to do a hard pitch to someone I've never met. Yeah. I think the relationship approach is much easier. Of course, it takes longer. Yeah, because you have to build those relationships. But also, if you know, and I would also say, don't burn things too early. So if you, you know, if you're only going to get $25 for a show, then maybe it's too early. Yeah, maybe you should wait until it might be worth, you know, worth it with a bigger audience, which means the ad revenue would be bigger, but also the audience would be bigger and you might see some return. So it has to be a win-win situation there.
Yeah, agreed, agreed. I actually, we often tell people in the early days, when you're at that kind of level, it's not really worth the bother of arranging the contracts, of sending out your media kits, of all the chasing. It's better to spend the time on improving your content and creating better stuff. But at that stage, sometimes it's worth putting in a sponsor slot for yourself, because it gets people used to the fact that you do have products or you have mentions of things in there, so that, you know, 50 episodes in, your first sponsor slot isn't going to turn people off because they're like, oh no, he's sold out.
I do think that's right. I also think what is important is the show notes page. Mm-hmm. So it's really important. I mean, even if your listens are lower, if you have high traffic, so I have a lot of people who actually read the transcripts of my shows who don't necessarily listen. So the sponsor will also get their logo and a couple of lines of text on my show page, on the show notes page. And obviously I'll also have links there, affiliate links and other things. But because they get that, and they get that even if, you know, and that show notes is there even if they stop being a sponsor later on. Mm-hmm. So I think that can also add to your sort of pitch when you're ready to do that. So that kind of traffic. Also YouTube, you know, if you are interviewing someone, or you can use ads in your YouTube description. All my interviews I put on YouTube as well. So those are some other ways in that you can kind of make things better by having traffic as well.
Yeah, perfect. Well, I'm sure a lot of people got something out of that. That's some great tips there. Let's go on to your audiobooks. So this is something I found really interesting as well, because obviously we are creating audio. Podcasting is an audio medium, and audiobooks are a separate thing. But how do you tie them together? How do you use your podcast to monetize your audiobooks?
Yeah. So first of all, people can make their own audiobooks. So if you are, you know, your audience are very technically savvy. So you can record your own audiobooks and upload those audio files to acx.com. And that's Amazon's distribution service. You can also even produce audiobooks. So if you are an audio producer, you can have a share in rights, or you can be paid to produce other people's audiobooks. So that might be an additional revenue stream for people, or even voice talent. There's probably voice talent listening to your show. you know, there's a lot of authors looking for voice talent to read their books. So one of the things for sort of marketing the audiobooks is obviously talking about it. Mm-hmm. I've also shared snippets. So with ACX, you can share 5 minutes, or if you do a non-exclusive contract, you can share whole chapters. So I have actually used a chapter from my audiobooks as a whole show on some of my podcasts. I did record one myself, but it was so much hard work that now I have like a voice doppelganger. But essentially, it just makes the call to action to move from podcast to audiobook much, much easier, because you know you've got an audio listener who's there. And especially now, you know, all they need to do is click over to the Audible app and download a sample or put it on their wish list or whatever. And then they can move from, you know, I might have a topic of self-doubt for creatives. And then I might say, oh, and by the way, lots more in the successful author mindset available on audio.
Excellent.
You know, so people can, and I'll just throw that in to conversation. It wouldn't be just the call to action, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of people are put off by the idea of having to create, you know, they see the idea of an audiobook as being this big, massive thing they have to create. They have to write, you know, 50,000 words first and then create it. But I've seen a lot of people succeed with just, you know, a collection of themed blog posts, for example, turned into an audiobook. Maybe, you know, there's a narrative drawn through it. There's an intro and a conclusion, and put that out there for maybe a lower price. Seems to work quite well. Is that someone you've seen?
Well, you can't control the price on Audible. Amazon controls that price. Okay. So if it is nonfiction, you can generally do fine with shorter books. So my nonfiction tend to be around 6 hours. But with fiction, it's definitely much, much harder. And they're used to a lot sort of higher quality. I really don't like the idea of just blog posts sewn together, unless, as you say, they have been heavily edited and a narrative kind of put through it, which is basically the process of a book.
Absolutely.
I think if you shy away from the idea of writing a book, then maybe an audiobook isn't such a good idea. But I think now we're at a point in the publishing ecosystem where a lot of nonfiction authors in particular are writing books. So that's definitely something that you can do and add that to your repertoire. And you can do a non-exclusive contract where you can publish, say, self-direct from your website, which I do for some of my stuff, or publish on other things. So Google Play just announced audiobooks. Kobo has audiobooks. So there are more distributors coming on board for audiobooks, but at the moment, they're not as dominant in the markets we work in, in terms of Audible is just, you know, huge at this point. And with Alexa and the Echo and the, you know, voice at home devices and in cars and things like that, audiobooks are only going to get bigger and bigger over time. And what I would say as well, sorry, I'm getting excited about this, but as podcasters, some people want to know more about us and they want to understand our own manifestos, you know, what our journey, what we've learned, and putting that in a book and then putting that out as an audiobook can really help people to get to know you. So it's a personal brand thing as well as an income thing. And it kind of then can feed back into your podcast. So the whole thing becomes like a financial and creative ecosystem.
Yes. Yeah. No, I totally agree. I think there's something in that, and that we've learned these audio skills, we've learned how to present, all that kind of stuff. And am I right in thinking there's probably less competition in the audiobook space than the standard self-publishing space?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think nonfiction particularly is fantastic right now. People are hungry. I mean, I don't know about you. I mean, I've been listening to podcasts for years, but often at this point, I'm like, do you know what? I want to cut the waffle. I just want to listen to this person's book.
Yes.
You know, I don't want to listen to Cal Newport do another interview on Deep Work. I just want to listen to Deep Work on audio, which, by the way, is a fantastic audiobook. So this is the thing. I actually think we're moving into a more mature audio market. Mm-hmm. We've seen a boom in podcasting. I mean, when I started in 2009, it was a wasteland, but it's really boomed since 2015. And audiobooks are starting to boom as well. They're the fastest growing segment in the publishing world. And, you know, if you have the audio skills, that's what I'm saying. You know, this might be a real opportunity for some of this audience to get into the production side. So even if you don't want to write a book, you can actually do royalty shares and work with other authors and get a percentage of their income, which could be amazing for some people.
Absolutely. Your podcast as a showcase of your audio and presenting skills, basically, to sell that. It's a really sort of sideways way to monetize a podcast, but completely. Yeah, great idea. Excellent. Okay, let's finish up. You've mentioned a few times about affiliate income. Is there any particular ways you're using affiliate income to monetize your podcast?
Well, I think the biggest thing there is to use a plugin like PrettyLinks, which, you know, is on WordPress, and to make easily rememberable and shareable URLs. because if you are just naturally talking about something in a conversation, you can just, you know, throw in a link that you remember. I mean, obviously, if you are planning it, you know, hardcore in advance, you can put your links so you remember to say them. But I think that, you know, affiliate stuff can so often be included naturally in a conversation. So that's what I would say. Make sure any affiliate relationship you have, you've got an easy URL. And then, yeah, you can stuff into your introduction, you can put stuff into the you know, interviews, you can put stuff in your show notes. And I mean, I find affiliate income is mostly a trickle unless it is a a webinar or something. When you're doing an actual event, and I will often you know, advertise webinars in my podcast, although they're not evergreen. So, you know, obviously you want the evergreen affiliate stuff plus the spike webinar income over time. But I think, you know, the main lesson is that you can use a combination of all of these things. And obviously you don't need to go from nothing to everything all in one go. But that over time you can start to sort of build in the various levels.
Yes. Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. I mean, I think, the Pretty Links tip is great there. It's something we use all the time. Just making sure that every time you mention any product that you use, I mean, you'll be teaching your audience how to do things with certain tools, certain software, certain packages, certain courses. Mm-hmm. And every time you mention those, just to use your Pretty Link. You know, we use the podcastcoast.com/Pretty Link, for example. We actually have an affiliate
there
link.
There we go.
So it's great. Yeah. And I think affiliate income is a great precursor to sponsorship too, isn't it? Because it's basically sponsorship without having to sign up a sponsor deal. You're paid through success. And that's often how I see people doing that sponsored slot, as I talked about earlier. Before sponsorship, you do an affiliate slot every week just to get people used to that idea. So thanks for the tips here. That's excellent.
Yeah, great.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming on. I mean, it's been so useful. Different ways to monetize. We've got Patreon, we've got corporate sponsors, audiobooks, affiliate, loads of different ways that people can get involved, and lots of good first steps there, I think, as well. So I'd love to send people over to your site, Joanna. Go over to thecreativepen.com. That's right, isn't it? It's thecreativepen.com.
Yes. And pen with a double N.
Of course, I always forget that. Yeah, so it's thecreativepen.com, pen with a double N. And you're the same on most social medias, aren't you? Certainly Twitter, you're thecreativepen. So if you want to get in touch, tell Joanna how much you enjoyed this episode, then get on Twitter and get in touch with her there. Is there anything in particular you're working on right now, Joanna, that you want to tell people about, anything that they should go and check out?
Well, come over to the podcast, which is also the Creative Pen podcast, and lots of information if you want to write a book or if you want to do an audiobook or anything about that. So yeah, come on over.
Perfect. Thank you very much. All right. Thank you too for listening. We shall continue this. We're in between seasons right now, so we'll have a couple more interview shows before we start up the next season, and we'll keep you informed of when that will be, what the topic will be as well. But thank you for keeping tuned during the break time, and I hope you're having a good podcasting life at the moment. Enjoy it, and we'll talk to you next time.